It's time to get organized with Dr. Craig and Citizen Action. Working for democracy and taking on economic, racial, and environmental issues across Wisconsin and around the United States, here's Earl Ingram with Dr. Robert Craig.
Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. As always, excited about my next guest, the one and only Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, back in the saddle again. Good morning to you, Dr. Craig. A lot of stuff to talk about this morning, Dr. Craig. The outcome of the elections last night, are people making more of that than we should?
I think it confirms what we already knew, that first of all, let's face it, this is a structural thing. Presidents are generally lose a lot of ground in the last midterm of a second term. So there's a structural thing going on here. Then you have an extraordinary situation where Donald Trump has done a lot of unpopular things and a lot of things and the opposite of what he wanted to do, claimed he would do when he ran for office, particularly on the cost of living. And so given how underwater the president is, in opinion polls, it's not surprising that that would lead to a Democratic surge. Of course, the underlying subtext of the story is, what version of Democrat does this prove we should have? Because we have two former CIA agents, both women, right, who run the New Jersey and Virginia governor's races, who are very distinct in their political orientation from Zora Mandami, the new mayor of New York. So both the left wing of the party and the kind of more centrist corporatist wing of the party both have a story to tell as to which brand of Democrat is going to be more successful. But obviously, at this point, Donald Trump's unpopularity raises all boats.
So is it too early to say that there's going to be a significant kind of uncoupling of the Democratic Party as we've known it? Is this a transition, a moment in time, or is it, as you just stated, related to Donald Trump's not being popular?
Well, the Democrats have been historically unpopular as well for their failure to deliver or be perceived as delivering. I would say that I think there's some truth in the not delivering, but I also think that in Biden's case, there was a bit of unfairness. A lot of the things he did that were transformational weren't noticed. So obviously, politics is often unfair. But and so this does seem to be a situation where the unpopularity of the other side is the beginning of it. But if you were going to parse what kind of Democrat is, can take the most encouragement out of this, because there really is a battle kind of for the future Democratic Party going on the inside. I would say that it's Democrats who are willing to fight, that are willing to stand up to authoritarianism, and that is a change. And it is stunning if you look at the interviews, say how unpopular, quote unquote, the Democratic establishment is. Chuck Schumer, who never endorsed Zora Mandami, the Democratic nominee for mayor, who just won over 50% of the vote, or House Minority Leader Jeffries, who waited till the beginning of early voting to endorse. And so there is kind of like a play it safe, play by the old rules kind of Democratic leadership that has become intolerable to people.
You know, Dr. Craig, it's not just a Zora Mandani, as he's being called now, a communist and all sorts of other ridiculous statements that people are making about him, but he's a Muslim. And Dr. Craig, this is kind of groundbreaking in the fact that he, a Muslim, can become the mayor of the largest city in the nation, and the fact that, you know, he was able to rally young people who had never voted before. Is this a sign of the times, or is this just New York?
I mean, it's a sign of both. On the one hand, there's a new America, much more diverse America, growing. London had a Muslim mayor, but not New York, right? So there have been other countries that have gone through this transition. But that leads to a backlash on the other side. So both was motivating for the Cuomo campaign and for the Mandami campaign. Obviously, bigotry against Muslims or a belief that somehow that religion is inherently violent
yes.
is absurd and awful. And a lot of the hate is coming from people who declare themselves Christian. So very un-Christian values and views being expressed by quote unquote Christians, not all Christians, but some very loud people who proclaim themselves Christian.
You know, Dr. Craig, I think today is the record for the government being shut down. There certainly doesn't appear to be. Who's going to blink first? The Democrats can't. I mean, they've come this far. Can they blink?
I don't think they can blink. I think it would be a disaster for them. I think Trump can blink, but of course, Trump's pride and his whole brand of I am in charge, I am the king, though I deny that I was the king, is against it. It seems to me that Trump will eventually find an out, which he can deny as an out, and claim it's a victory. And you've seen him flailing around. He refuses to negotiate with the Democrats because that's a sign of weakness, right? Though I thought he was the great negotiator. There's a tension there, right? They part of the deal. But then he flailed out last week that they should end the filibuster, because the only reason they need 60 votes is because of the filibuster, which isn't in the Constitution, and it is an absurd kind of appendage of Jim Crow and of slavery. That's what it was used to keep those in place. But of course, these senators, Republican senators, don't want to lose their power. I think this ends as soon as Trump threatens all of their political careers unless they end the filibuster. But he hasn't done that. They've managed to talk him out of doing that yet. But it's very strange to follow this White House, Earl. You don't know where it is, because he declared he was going to ignore the court decisions and not start up SNAP again. And then that was walked back by the White House. So I don't know. I guess let's see what happens, right?
Well, you know, Dr. Craig, it's we're at a turning point. And it doesn't matter that you keep hearing Republicans say, and Speaker Johnson keep parroting. You know, I thought that the guy before Johnson, the Speaker, why am I forgetting his name?
California.
The last guy. Speaker. I thought that guy was, you know, a piece of work. But Johnson is even worse, because he looks right in the camera. And you look at him, he doesn't look like a guy who, you know, is going to be parroting untruths. But that's who he is now. And I think he's afraid to challenge. He's afraid to buck the God, right? And so even what's in the best interest of his constituents and the Republican Party, he's not going to challenge. Well, he just did a little bit. I guess I have to retract that. With the filibuster, he kind of stood up and said that they're not going to do away with the filibuster, but is that just temporary?
Now, the Senate is the one that would get rid of the filibuster.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, yeah.
Speaker Johnson, but look, Speaker Johnson is a piece of work. I mean, a total extremist. He's the one who looks you in the face and tells you a patent lie and doing it, right?
Yeah.
And look, this is pure. This can be described purely in terms of Machiavellian power calculation. The previous speakers couldn't keep that caucus unified, and they have to because they have such a narrow margin, because there's so many disagreements within it, as the Republican caucus in the House. So the way he solved that problem, because the last speakers got overthrown, right, is to attach himself to Donald Trump so that Donald Trump is the whip, essentially, and scares them. They won't trust Trump because they're afraid he'll primary them, right? That's their, because they live in gerrymandered districts. Right. They represent them. So their only threat is from the far right, and anything that anyone who Donald Trump turns against and declares someone else the person, I can unseat any of these members of Congress. So therefore, Johnson has no freedom of movement. If he showed freedom of movement, then he would be overthrown as Speaker by one of his contentious factions. So in a very real way, he made a deal with the devil. Is the way he becomes Speaker is to do whatever the king tells him to do.
You know, Dr. Craig, I'm looking at the outcome of the referendum in California. And have the Democrats kind of checkmated the Republicans as it relates to, you know, the redistricting? And Donald Trump clearly knows that, as you stated before, he's up against history. And, you know, with the party that's not in office during these midterms, generally loses. So he tried to rig everything to make sure that in his last few years he'd still be in control. The last thing Donald Trump wanted was to have to face what he faced the last time, where he doesn't have total control. So what Gavin Newsom did and what they did in California and other places across the nation, is that a safeguard? Do you feel comfortable with what transpired?
Well, it's necessary because you can't uphold an ethical doctrine that says thou shalt not gerrymander when the other side gerrymanders.
Right.
Because then you assure gerrymandering against your side, and it's the side that doesn't believe in gerrymandering and wants to have a nonpartisan process. That's the only source of support for that is in the Democratic Party. And so it is like in a war, you need to do it very carefully and do it temporarily. That's the important thing, not justify gerrymandering, but to say, and that's what the California referendum was ingenious. It says this is a temporary measure because Donald Trump stole 5 congressional seats in Texas. So in other words, it's not justified as a gerrymandering's fine. It's a temporary emergency expedient. It doesn't solve the problem fully, Pearl, because that just balances out probably the way this comes out in the wash, what Texas did. But now Missouri has moved, Ohio has moved, North Carolina has moved, and with the Supreme Court essentially trashing the Voting Rights Act, they may be able to steal another 25, 30 seats from black members of Congress in black majority districts in these red states. And so, quite frankly, the question is, there will be some kind of Democratic surge. Can they steal enough seats to have a big enough firewall that they still hold Congress? Which, of course, if that happens, that really is a signal to the demise of democracy that you could do that, that you could literally manipulate the rules to overcome a great popular vote against your party in a midterm election. So we don't know. Maryland's tied in knots. They started a process because the Senate president, who's a Democrat, disagrees with this. Unclear what Illinois and New York will do, for example. Obviously, it isn't happening in Wisconsin aside from a court decision because there is no unified rule in Wisconsin, just for example. So I think it remains to be seen how many seats Trump can steal and how many seats he needs to steal. He knew in Georgia in 2020 exactly how many votes he needed. We actually don't know how many seats he needs to steal and how many it's a ceiling of things.
You know, Dr. Craig, the verbiage. You know, are we at a turning point in this nation where, you know, there was a time in my lifetime that these kinds of things, I don't know if they happened, and if they did, they were happening in a vacuum. They weren't out for the whole world to see how crooked our government can be What are your thoughts about this? Is right in broad daylight. And so what do we say to the American people who have believed in our election process and who vote and think one person, one vote, and all those things that our nation supposedly made us different and better than most other nations, to see all of this happening? What are your thoughts on it? You're a political scientist guy. I mean, what are your thoughts on all this? You're saying this stuff kind of matter-of-factly, Dr. Craig. It continues to evolve in the worst way, isn't it?
I mean, as I've said earlier, we have to keep in mind there are two different threats to democracy: the attack on its basic mechanisms of how we decide things, and then whether it can actually be an effective form of government that delivers prosperity for most people. Those are both different parts of the problem. But it's not just, I think you're making a very good point here, Earl. It's not only that the mechanisms are made unfair, it's that democracy depends on both sides agreeing that there is a fair set of rules that everyone lives by. And even when I lose, when Richard Nixon is elected by landslide, I think it's legitimate, and I think Nixon is our president and needs to be given the power of president because it was a legitimate outcome, just as you believe when the Packers lose to the Carolina Panthers, it would be terrible if there was a lot more reason to believe that it was stolen. The coach of the Panthers had said, referee, call that pass interference, and then it was called, right?
Yes.
In other words, we need to think, for democracy to work, we have to accede to its judgments even when we lose, and we have to think it's a fair game. That is the secret. It was never done until the United States did it long term, that you could have a democracy that had legitimacy. Well, loses its legitimacy, what happens is, not does it justify what Trump is doing, it creates what you see in the more corrupt third world countries, where everyone, when they get power, prosecutes their opponents. And you never know if any, maybe that they probably all are prosecutable, frankly, in these countries, right? And everyone persecutes their opponents in every which way and throws them in jail, right? And so it gets to that point, you can't really have a stable democracy. So this is extremely damaging. What has stopped it in the past is that both parties were committed to the fundamental rules and both thought they could win under the rules. It's hard for us on the outside to fix what's gone wrong with the Rogan Party. It's become an authoritarian party. It is not a liberal democratic party in the way all previous major political parties have been in the United States since the founding.
So the evolution of our democracy, of our government right now, of our elections and those types of things, Dr. Craig, really kind of turn people off. I mean, it's not that you find people more willing to get engaged and involved. People want to run away from it because it's become so crooked. And so that even as I talk with people, they say, hey, I don't want to hear anything about any politics. I've turned off that. Since Donald Trump has become president, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to focus on any of it. I stick my head in the sand. That's not a good thing, Dr. Craig. How do we bring people back? People who have been engaged, who no longer want to be engaged, because if ever there was a time that we needed to be engaged, it's now. I mean, are you seeing that with Citizen Action and the work that you do?
Yeah, there's always been a cynicism about politics, but it's gotten much worse. But look, we had record turnout in Virginia, New Jersey, and New York had the greatest turnout since the 1960s. So there's evidence that once a real decision is on the table, a lot of people are stepping forward. But I think I'd mentioned there are two dimensions to the risk of democracy, threat to democracy, the attack on its mechanisms, and then whether it delivers. It's that second dimension, what it delivers and what it credibly delivers, that has the most promise. Because if people have a stake in it, say, if I vote for candidates, I'm going to finally get health care that I can afford so that my medical conditions can be treated, right? Or I can get a better pay paying job and be able to own my own home, then you have a stake in it, and then you vote for that reason. Now, the problem is politicians of on our side, Earl, that like to make promises that they have no intention of delivering on. And that needs to stop. If you want to run on, we had two centrist candidates for governor, Mikey Sherrill and now Governor Spamberger in Virginia, run on affordability. I want to know from the centrist playbook, what are they actually going to do to make things more affordable in Virginia, New Jersey? And if they don't, then they'll be thrown out by some MAGA Republican saying, I'm the one who's going to make it affordable.
Well, but Dr. Craig, they can't unilaterally or singularly push a button and change the dynamic that exists in the nation right now. And this slippery slope that we're kind of headed down with AI and all of those different things, irregardless of what they say, the facts that they're faced with are something altogether different. They need more than just themselves. They can't wave a magic wand.
Well, if you're going to be governor, you have a lot of power,
right,
or mayor, but you need an analysis of what the power is a mayor or a governor has. And one of the things Mandami did brilliantly is look at the mayor, the New York mayor, power of that office and say, hey, I control housing costs because we have rent control. I can freeze the rent in New York.
But
we run the mass transit system. We can make the transit free, right? So in a governor can do a lot about healthcare costs. There are a lot of things most governors do not pursue, but could, that would take on the bilking of consumers by hospitals, by insurance companies, big pharma. So you need to actually do that, for example. You could deal with the cost of electricity and of heating because it is state commissions that are approving these massive increases for for-profit utilities like We Energies in Milwaukee and other major actors in other parts of the state, also allowing them to build massive, expensive new fossil fuel plants, which is the most expensive and profitable thing for them to do and the thing that will raise our rates the most, without doing the things that are much cheaper and also better for the climate, like energy conservation and renewable energy, especially renewable energy people control, like rooftop solar or community solar.
You know, Dr. Craig, the reason that I love listening to you so much is because our government is complex. And we don't know it. I mean, we can't all be political science majors. And so many of us, just American citizens who go to work every day and try to live the best lives that we can that this nation supposedly offers us. And so we don't understand the complexities. You just talked about the things that the governor and the mayor, the latitude and leverage that they have to kind of make things better. But if we don't know that, And so where do we learn that? I mean, we don't know that we could need to be bringing the pressure on a governor or that we need to be bringing the pressure on a mayor because we're too busy looking and we're hearing about the national politics. And so we're focusing on national politics when that old axiom, all politics are local, really is at the root of what we should know. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah, it's hard for individuals, though they can do it in groups. Like that's why people join an organization like the one I lead,
right,
Wisconsin, because people together can figure out these systems and put pressure on the system, right? And that's what we do on healthcare and on energy and on climate,
right,
us and our members all over the state. It's a group activity, just like it's a team sport, but it helps a lot when you have elected officials that are clear about things. And so the best elected officials, the most ethical in my mind, are the ones that are very concrete about what they're going to do. They don't just have these consultant, poll-tested talking points. Good health care and quality education for all, that means nothing, right? Exactly what are you going to do, right? And a former mayor of Pittsburgh said there was a way to tell whether a politician was telling you something. This is something I would advise everyone to do. Negate the statement and see if anyone would actually defend that position. So if you say, aren't kids wonderful? You say, kids, they're awful. I hate them. No politician politician would say the other. So they just told you nothing, just count it, right?
Right.
And so that I'm going to regulate the rates hospitals charge because they charge in Wisconsin the highest rates in the Midwest and the fifth highest in the country, and it's three times what Medicare has to pay for the same services. Then I either did it or I didn't, right? And there are people who oppose that. A lot of people that will oppose that because the hospital association is a major political actor. So you look at a Bernie Sanders, he's very clear as to what he's going to do. If he was ever president, he could be held accountable for whether he did it or not. And Zohran Mamdani did the same thing. If he doesn't have free transit, people know it because he was very clear. It wasn't some, I support some nice sounding policy that's a meaningless word, right, to people. You don't know what entails. Which is quite frankly, I mean, you almost never, I'll take Governor Evers as an example of a very traditional Democratic politician, you almost never hear from Evers anything concrete as to exactly what he will deliver for someone. It's like, I increased funding for the so-and-so program by 3.5%. What does that mean? What does it do? How many people does it help? And how much does 3.5% more give you? You do not learn that. And so that there's a lot of diseducation of the public done by politicians of both sides. So Mamdani is going to be very accountable for a very clear agenda that he repeated over and over again that anyone can wrap their mind around. So that's part of it. And then part of it is people joining with other folks in organizations that push on particular issues and become expert as in a group, because you're not going to be a good consumer, political consumer just on your own, right?
You know, Dr. Craig, healthcare has always been one of the major planks of citizen action. And now we're talking about the Obama support,
the market,
subsidies. Is it now too late? Have those the very thing that the Democrats basically, kind of push this into government shutdown? Have they removed those subsidies? Is it too late? Is that already done?
Oh, no, it's not too late. And in fact, everyone's getting their bills for starting in January 1st, 2026 now, who buys insurance on their own at the ACA, Affordable Care Act marketplace. And so people are getting the sticker shock with their premiums doubling when they already have it. The premiums are not super low already for a lot of people. You see people, a pair of seniors in their early 60s with an income of $85,000 a year will see their premiums go from about $7,000 a year. They can put the money together, but that's still a lot on their income, right?
Right.
$28,000 a year, totally unaffordable. And that doesn't include the co-pays and deductibles, just the premiums. And so they timed this perfectly because the shutdown is going on as people get these notices. And even if you're not getting it, it's probably someone you know who did, or an aunt, or an uncle, or someone, a brother, or sister that got one, and so it's very well known. One thing that's going to happen though is, let's say they continue the enhanced subsidies, right, as part of a deal to end the shutdown. The insurance companies determine their rates in the middle of the year based on the fact that they didn't think the extra subsidies would be there, and the result is the insurance prices went up substantially, because what their calculation is that a lot of people who are healthier will drop their insurance because they won't be able to afford it, and therefore people who are sicker are the ones who will pay the much steeper price because they have to, and that cuts into profits for insurance companies. They need a lot of healthy people to pay in to cover the fewer number of sick people. It's called distributing the risk. And so, frankly, the price is going to be higher next year because the Republicans did this. But they can absolutely win the subsidies. But let's see how far this goes. I mean, Donald Trump has been willing to hold people hostage who are hungry, who are starting to go out without food starting Saturday, Earl, where their SNAP cards weren't filled up. And that's how they feed their kids.
You know, Dr. Craig, I'll tell you, about a month ago, I had to go to the emergency room. And so I wound up in the emergency room, and I was there from about 8 a.m. to about 6 p.m. And they ran every test known to man on me, Dr. Craig, and some twice. And then they let me go 8 hours later and said, everything checks out, go see your doctor. What I'm asking you is, they ran all these expensive tests, all of them, in the emergency room. I don't know what it cost. It must have been astronomical, Dr. Craig. And then released me and told me to go, everything checks out, go see your doctor. So if hospitals are losing money, and these kinds and insurance companies are losing money, these types of things that are happening, I'm sure they don't just happen to me. I have Medicare. So they ran all these tests because they saw some guy there who at least had Medicare. Why don't they control that? Why would they allow those kinds of things to take place, Dr. Craig, that run up the cost, as opposed to our elected officials addressing that? Okay, you can't just frivolously run all those tests on somebody in an emergency room and run the cost up on Medicare. I mean, I know I'm not just the only person. Why don't they address those kinds of things, Dr. Craig? It would bring the cost of it down.
Yeah, the hospitals are not losing money, just to clarify. They claim they're losing money, and they'll tell you that particular hospital is losing money, usually one in a rural area, right, or in a lower income area, because they're fleeing to find the most profitable things. That's why if you're in the Milwaukee area, there are all these great new gleaming hospitals away from mass transit.
Unbelievable. Bringing
the city out in the suburbs,
right,
to get private pay insurance, which pays better than Medicare or Medicaid. So they're massive. The bigger hospital systems, including the ones in the state of Wisconsin, have squirreled away billions of dollars, and then they're screaming poverty all the time, okay? they are structured, unless we stop them with government policy,
for
to maximize
profit.
Revenue, period.
Yeah, for profit.
And that is what they do. It's all they do. They're the terminators of that. And part of the problem is the system is fragmented. If you had one universal Medicare for all system, then the government would have a lot more leverage to go after abuses. And it doesn't guarantee they will, but it gives them a lot more leverage, right? And so we need to move towards a more public system. The insurance companies, as long as they're making their profit, have no incentive. And by the way, their solution is to have massive claims denials. They have an estimated 250 to 300 million claims denials a year, the insurance industry. It's their business model.
So
that creates my medical debt is the highest form of debt. And by the way, courtesy of the Trump administration, the Biden administration, through Consumer Finance Protection Administration, had banned medical bills from going to your credit report. The Trump administration just reversed that.
You know, Dr. Craig, the average American citizen is caught in the middle of this. We have no leverage. We have no control at all over any of this. And yet those people who do have control, well, we understand why. There's gold in them, our heels. But the American people, we're just in a petri dish. So even though you're aware of it, and guys like Citizen Action, people like Citizen Action and others, what can we do? You know, we're sacrificial lambs. This has been going on. It's going to continue to go on. When does it ever stop?
Well, it's a matter of whether we allow the current system, which is rigged for profit, it's not in the interest of health, or we take it back through an effective, active democratic government. We need to vote people, at the very least, if they don't have time to get involved in organizations working on this, which a lot of people, you know, are trying to live their lives and working very hard in their day jobs and to raise their families, right, or look after their right. families already raised, look after sick parents or adult children who need help, right?
I get it.
Or more support, then vote for candidates that are very clear about this. And don't vote for candidates that give you just talking points and some sort of pleasing personality. And so we know that it's not a mystery. There's no, it's often acted like, including in the media, that we're on some kind of journey to figure out why healthcare is so expensive. like we're studying the mysteries of the universe, right? There's no mystery about this. It was set up by people with massive institutions with tremendous power that control our government and cause elected leaders to operate in their interests, whether they understand that or not, rather than the interest of their own constituents. And by the way, everyone has all sorts of beliefs that actually make this seem legitimate, like somehow this is democratic government. It's amazing to me how these for-profit entities and hospitals are nonprofit name only. They get not to be taxed, but they act just like Fortune 500 for-profit companies. What great legitimacy and deference their lobbyists are treated with, like they're actually operating in the public interest and not just trying to take the public to the cleaner all the time, each and every time.
Well, you know, Dr. Craig, you hear, well, it's socialism. They're pushing socialism. You can look at countries like Canada and other places, and it works, okay? It works, even though you hear the wealthy amongst us who will say, well, you don't want that kind of system because it means you'll have to wait longer. It doesn't matter how much money you have, but you don't get to the what happens in our nation right now. The more money you have, the better you're going to be treated. The more you can, you know, afford, the better your health care is going to be. That's not the way it works in places like Canada and other places where all people are kind of considered equal, and that's the fair shake that human beings should get. But if the American people don't understand that, Dr. Craig, because I think the majority of the American people think that the way the system is set up now is good for all of us. Again, we don't know the complexities of it that you know and others know behind the scenes. We don't know we're being set up. It's all of these things are, you know, kind of like for the ignorance of the American people not knowing how our government works.
I actually think the crisis in democracy, Earl, is because people do know it.
You do.
They don't exactly know why and how, but a lot of the MAGA base is angry at the system, think the system has screwed them, and see Trump's attack upon the system as some kind of blow for average people, right? Even though he makes it worse, it's a bait and switch, that it's a sort of, that's what right-wing populism is. You get mad at the immigrants or the poor people who aren't like me, et cetera, right? All of the lazy people that, you know, Speaker Johnson claiming that said that a big part of Medicaid is 29-year-olds living in their parents' basements and not working. Like 29-year-olds doing that give a damn whether they're on a healthcare policy or not. I mean, it's absurd, right? Given that almost everyone on Medicaid works in very high percentages. But then you have on the Democratic more side, people who are cynical that doesn't deliver anything and it's all corrupt and walk away, or people who are supporting folks like Bernie Sanders and Zora Mandami but aren't getting to the point of governing power. So I think people do know that the system is rigged against them, and they experience it all the time in their lives, but it doesn't naturally mean that they move towards supporting candidates and positions that are actually going to solve the problem. But I think socialism has largely lost its bite, Earl. You brought up socialism. We're not in the Cold War anymore. leave aside immigrants from Cuba and Venezuela that experienced authoritarian regimes, which is not democratic socialism, and the democratic socialism is opposed, radically opposed to that. But if you understand that if you actually poll people, the elements of socialism are extremely popular, like free universal public education.
I agree with
Medicare.
I agree with aspects of socialism. I mean, the average person should understand that the positives in capitalism, the positives in socialism, the positives in communism, all of the isms, they're good and bad. But when you're led to believe, like right now, that Democrats want to give free health care to illegal immigrants. And so that's what this is about. That's why we can't talk about the health care issue right now, because that's what Democrats want to do. They want to give this free health care to illegal immigrants. And people actually believe that.
They're very good at divide and conquer and using people's prejudices against them, because that's what this is, right? By the way, Canada gets along just fine, or Great Britain. If you're visiting those countries and you get hit by a car, you know what? They fix you up, and there's no bill. I'm just saying, you can. It's a complete canard. You could do that, but the odd thing is that Democrats think, okay, we won't cover the immigrants, which is what we do. And then they still say it, and people still believe it. So maybe you should do the ethical thing and just have a fully universal healthcare system. But leaving that aside, that is the problem. You need to, here's what moves a lot of people, Earl. They need to understand that they're being manipulated. If they see, you know, that it's that it's really a magic trick, that ravaging pulled out of hats, that they're screaming, go blame the immigrants, so you won't notice that you don't have health care. Once they see that, that offends people and that turns them against these movements. So they need, in many ways, I think that the resistance to authoritarianism, because there's an attempt at authoritarian consolidation going on here that's in progress, is to reveal them for who they are to most of the public, and that's what will end them. It very much is, oh, the emperor doesn't have any clothes. Oh, that little man behind the curtain is the Wizard of Oz, and he's behind all of the things the witches are doing.
You know, Dr. Craig, what as you move around this nation and talk with people like yourself and others who understand the dynamics of what's taking place in this country, it is encouraging to me to know that groups like Citizen Action and others are still fighting the battle, fighting the fight. You know, because without you guys and the groups of people and brilliant people that you get to sit down with, do you sometimes, as you guys mobilize, we don't see that. The average citizen doesn't see that and doesn't know that this battle that you guys are waging without you and what you guys do, it, as young people say, it would be a wrap. We would just be, you know, the fight wouldn't be a fair fight, because those who have the power aren't going to cede it without a fight. And so you and others like you is why I admire you so much, because you don't ever get discouraged. Or do you? Because I don't ever see you being discouraged. You're always that guy who's optimistic. Why?
I guess, to use a sports analogy, Earl, because I know you're a sports fan, that, you know, you're not going to come back in the fourth quarter playing badly unless you believe you can do it, right?
Right, right.
Well, I guess I think that it's always possible for us to win and create the equitable multiracial democracy that this country deserves and everyone in it deserves. They're just forces, you know, arrayed against us. I mean, there's positive things all the time. I mean, we still got to remember that Elon Musk tried to make himself a hero here in Wisconsin, was repudiated by the voters in the last Supreme Court election, right, of Susan Crawford.
Right.
That these, you can beat these people. And then that sent him back into his hole. He seems to have left active politics for the time being, though his billions are doing all sorts of nefarious things, and he's been punished badly by, you know, sales of Tesla plummeting in the U.S. and in Europe, because, you know, it turns out that being a wannabe authoritarian is not a popular thing. So there's hope here, but I think in a way we have to go through an ordeal, Earl. That is to say, it's going to require a lot of courage and a lot of people taking a lot of action to reclaim our democracy. But it only works if we actually do something with that democracy. And so a lot of the things that are being thought about what government ought to deliver for people, what people ought to have as a matter of right in this country, that's all critically important. And we can get over this era where, my Lord, Earl, they're all like, nothing's possible. Oh, that's a serious problem. Oh, yes, childcare is unaffordable, but I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do about it. That's hogwash. The question of whether we have the courage to do something about it.
Yeah, Dr. Rick, the last thing I'll say is the thing about citizen action in your organization, and I was talking with one of your members the other day, you've got young people engaged as baby boomers like me and our generation starts to basically, you know, because of our life cycles, back up and can't fight the battles anymore. The fact that you have a lot of young people who are engaged in citizen action, who see this next generation, who are ready to take it to the next level, because the Nancy Pelosi's, the Chuck Schumer's, and those kinds of people, our generation and us fighting the battles are kind of winding down. But it's encouraging to know that you have, and others like you, have organized a group of young people who will take this battle to the next level. Is it safe to say that?
I actually think it's to be determined, Earl. They're really good signs about the younger generation, but, you know, we have the whole phenomenon of very alienated young men who apparently, there was a good column in the New York Times or Washington Post this week about how well Nick Fuentes is now doing. He's much more of an upfront Nazi, even though he and Kirk were enemies, now that Kirk is not on the scene. So when people are frustrated, when people are alienated, you got the option of turning to antisocial things and supporting authoritarian movements, right? Because younger women are doing better than men in terms of their college attainment and their careers. You can try to figure out how more young men can catch up, or you can say that the problem is these women have too many rights and they should have the rights they've gained over the last 50 years rescinded, right? And other retrograde ideas. And of course the problem is with the current media, which is not on radio, they're all on YouTube, Earl, and
that's
all
correct.
Of the social media, right, with YouTubers. There's some charlatan to voice all of these prejudices and fears and channel it, that Nick Fuentes is of the world.
Hey, Dr. Craig, it's always a pleasure. Man, really love listening to you and you giving this really, I think, kind of encouraging information, always at a time when we seem like we're at our lowest ebb. You're always the kind of guy who says, oh, whoa, wait a minute, it's not over. And so I always appreciate your perspective on those things. You lift me up, and hopefully with having you continue to be on the airways, we'll lift others up. Really appreciate it, my friend.
Always great to be with you, Earl, and all of your thoughtfulness as we move through history together.
All right. We'll see you next time. Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, on the What's Going On with Earl Ingram. See you next time.